What up? This is Caroline with the CWC podcast, where we believe that life without your favorite foods is not worth living. I'm going to be talking a lot about my journey to food freedom, and of course, I will always keep it real by sharing the good, the bad, and of course, the ugly.
Welcome back to the CWC podcast. I just spent 10 minutes getting my everything all set up. I had to get my table moved out of the way because my mic only reaches, like, I need a longer cord, even though this is a really long cord. It only reaches my computer and, like, just like as far as I can pull it, and I need it closer. So I'm out of breath moving my stuff around. So today, oh my God, now there's a fly. God damn it. If that fly, like, gets in my face the whole time, I'm gonna be like going nuts. Now I see him over there in my window. Okay, so we're just gonna get started. Today I wanna talk about, I'm talking about mental health and my own experiences with my own slew of mental health disorders, which I also, like, I hate naming them. I hate that, like, I feel like it's very cliche, especially these days, to be like, oh, I have OCD and I have ADHD and I have all these things. But I'm going to kind of go into mine specifically and what I really think they're rooted in, and then how that affects my ability to function as a basic human. And I feel like this, at the end of the day, is one of the most relatable things that I ever talk about. Because of all the feedback I get. Like, I consistently get more feedback when I talk about my mental health stuff and my struggles than I do anything else. So, because then I think that all kind of, it gets tied into, like, the fitness stuff and, or really anything, like relationships, marriage, parenting. So let me fix my light really quick. Let me just angle it. I moved it and I didn't realize I moved it, like, away from my face. Okay. All right. So I wrote down how my OCD played a role in my fitness obsession, as well as my food / alcohol obsessions. So I recently gave up, like, giving a shit about tracking macros, working out. I still care about exercising and weightlifting because I enjoy it and I enjoy the way that it makes me feel. But I've just reached a point, I would say it's been a really rough ride over the past 2 years, of, like, letting go, like, completely stopping caring and, like, letting it ultimately rule every, like, thought that just kind of swirls in the back of my head. I just let it go. I just don't want to live like that. I don't know if it's turning 40. I don't know if I've just continuously done enough of the work to deconstruct a lot of this shit. But this is where I've landed. And I posted a picture the other day of my body. I have not posted, like, a progress picture in a really long time. And I felt compelled to, I woke up and I was like, okay, I want to post a photo of my progress picture from, I think it was from January of 2021 or 22. I think it was last year, I think. And I was still kind of, like, trying to make myself track and, like, oh, I need to hit a number of protein and I need to do this and I need to do that. Like, all those things, like, I need to do, or else, or else what? Like, what's the worst case scenario if I didn't do those things? Well, oh, I feel like I'll lose all the muscle I've gained. And okay, why do I care? Like, you know, you start asking all these questions, and when something just, like, doesn't feel right with you, women just fight it. Like, I spent, and maybe I'm just tired. Maybe I'm just tired. I've spent my whole life masking and fighting the ways that I really feel about things to appear as something else? Why? And, you know, a long time, when I started doing the live videos, when I was competing and like fitness became my life and my obsession, and I was like living in the gym and like living to meal prep, like that literally became my hyperfixation. And I talk about hyperfixations because as someone with severe OCDs from childhood, those are like my safe havens, if that makes sense. Trying to explain to someone who does not have OCD what it's like to have OCD is exhausting because they just don't get it. And my husband gets very upset when he's like, don't tell me I don't understand. I'm like, but you don't. You don't. You don't know what it's like to have like a storm rolling in and you're sitting next to me and you're watching the weather like a normal human, and you see it and you're tracking it and you're watching it and you can see that it's probably gonna dissipate. So as a normal human with a normal brain, you're able to then fall asleep and be like, oh, I just watched the weather. That's all I can do. Like ultimately it's out of my control, right? So why worry about it? Someone with OCD can't do that. Like, I don't know how many times I can have to say it. And I think the most frustrating thing, speaking from someone who has these issues, it is so unnerving to have someone be like, well, just don't, there's nothing you can do. Why stress? There's nothing you can do about it. If I could do that, I would. My brain, a lot of the times, won't allow me to exit that catastrophic way of thinking. So I will sit there with him. I will watch the news as well. I'll see the same forecast. I'll watch it. But then as soon as his sleepy little head hits the pillow and he's snoring sound asleep with not a care in the fucking world, I'm over here spiraling, knowing I'm going to be up till 2 a.m. watching out the window like a crazy person, because I am convinced that if I just for one time let my guard down and relax and I'm not hypervigilant, that's going to be the one time that me and my family die in the middle of the night from a tornado ripping through our house that no one saw coming. Like, I don't know. That's OCD. Like, that's the best way I can put it into context for people who don't know what it's like. Like, you're literally convinced that like the worst will happen if you don't hyperfixate, if you aren't hypervigilant. Like, I believe that. I believe it to be true. So that's what continues. That's what keeps me in this cycle of obsessing and catastrophizing. Like, and in a weird way, this may sound bizarre, my childhood taught me and conditioned me to stay in a state of chaos because that is the only way I can feel safe. And I know that's really fucked up, but in a really weird way, it's like if nothing is going wrong and everything's going right, I suspect that like death is right around the corner or something awful is right around the corner. Like, I don't believe that things can be good. It's very, very hard. And so when things are in like panic or everything's going crazy, like I'm like, oh, okay, I know this feeling. It's an odd comforting feeling. It's very, very weird. And it's exhausting. And I have said that, and this is just, I'm just speaking from my own life experience. Like, existing is fucking exhausting, especially now. Like, pre-COVID, it was hard enough. Like, growing up was hard enough. Growing up in the fucking 90s was hard enough. Having to starve yourself to be 83 pounds. And like, looking back and realizing how much internalized misogyny I still have, that I'm still deconstructing, that I don't know will ever be fully deconstructed. I don't know if any of us will be. Is like, I see so many things with a completely new set of eyes. And I just have I'm no longer like, why am I the way that I am? Why am I? I don't care. I am this way. This is me. I'm in no way saying this is me. I am unwilling to change. I continue daily to try to work on the way that I react to things, mainly because I became a parent. I don't know what I would be like if I didn't become a parent. Becoming a parent forced me to like watch my reactions. Like it forced me to react a different way to a lot of things that would normally send me into like a psychotic episode of like screaming and raging and angry. Like that's just, I remember that was just who I was for so long. And I still feel like deep down, that's who I am. I don't know why I laugh, but I feel my revert like emotion. Like if anything like ruffles the water is fear and rage. Like those two things are the things that pop up most frequently. I think that those two things are very normal for most people, but they don't like to talk about it because why would you want to tell someone that you fear, that you feel fearful and like rageful all the time? I just don't care anymore. I'm only don't like this fly. I swear to God, don't. He's gonna bug me the whole time now. I'm just done pretending. I'm done. I'm done trying to act like I have my shit together. But for the most part, I manage and I'm fine. But like, I want to continuously talk about this, I guess, because I am getting more and more feedback now, not just from like women or men who watch my podcast, but they're like, oh, my daughter really like related to what you said about like the ADHD diagnosis and like how it affects you and how you deal with it. And I swear, even my friend Sarah texted me yesterday and she went to a concert with her son and he's young. And she was like, I could tell he was like almost irritable or like angry. And she asked him what was wrong. And he was like, I have to be on guard. There's too many people here. So he like completely shifted his demeanor. The way he was acting was not his normal self because of the crowd and the people around him. And it makes him very uncomfortable. She was like, he is so much like you. And had I not started talking about this stuff of like who I really am, like I feel like in a way, anyone who stumbles upon my podcast or finds me on Instagram or whatever is going to then feel safe to express the way they feel. And you guys, I've been married for 23 years. My husband knows who I am inside and out. There are still times where I won't really express how I'm feeling because it's just too much. Like the way that I feel a lot of the times, most days, is too much for a regular person who doesn't have issues with anxiety or anything. It's too much. And a lot of the times, like, bless my husband, he doesn't struggle with fucking, I mean, he struggles, but like, he just doesn't. He's someone who is very much just like, yeah, things are the way they are. You can't change them. Why stress about it? I have no reason to like rehash my past. Like, sure, I probably have trauma like everyone else, but like, it's in the past. Who cares? Like, he's just like, no, he's an alien. He's not from this planet. I'm like, yes, but you are the way that you are and you react to things the way you react because of the way you were brought up, because of things from your past. Don't you want to like figure out why and like try to fix it or change it? And he's like, well, I can try to work on it to change it, but like, why am I going to worry about what happened 20 years ago? I don't know. And maybe that's just like a way, maybe that's the way that men think. I don't know. Men, chime in. Is that like just a Joshua Austin Matthias thing? Or is that like an every man thing? Like, it's hard. Back to what I was saying, I'm getting really off. I feel like I'm like now squirreling. Having kids forced me to buck up and watch the way that I react to things because I did not want them to see me reacting the way that I saw my dad reacting, which was, my dad has bipolar. So like, it was very scary. And for my whole life, I justified it. I didn't, you know, we grow up in our household. We don't know how other people grow up. We just assume that like our family is normal and that's the way people grow up. So like, even at my first therapy session ever, I sat there and was like, I had a really normal childhood. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And we started talking, and I will never forget my therapist being like, you had a very traumatizing childhood. And I was like, no, I didn't. There were kids being abused and like their parents were like drug addicts or in jail. I had a really normal childhood. And she was like, actually, no, you didn't. Like, I don't even know how I would have coped if I had lived your childhood, living with someone with bipolar disorder who like refuses to take meds for it. Like, you, it's like a ticking time bomb. Like, you don't know what you're waking up to every single day. And that's just a fact. A lot of the time, I really, like, it took me so long to talk about this. Again, because of the society we live in, and number one, women are made to like not like, don't like, don't talk about the way you feel, like, oh, they're just complaining. You're over dramatizing everything. You're over analyzing everything. Like, so we're automatically just like made to feel like we should not share the way that we feel. And if we do share the way that we feel, if God forbid it's at the expense of a man, like, shut the fuck up. And so I'm not saying anything about anyone in particular. I'm just saying I have not really dove into all this yet because I am so used to expressing the way I feel, to only be gaslit that it's my problem. And then there's just like never any accountability taken. And so that's all I've known. And I talk about this with my husband these days, and we like, I will joke about the fact that I'm like, no wonder I have had issues, still have issues speaking up about like things I want sexually or things that I just want. Like, I feel bad before I even ask for something that I want. Like, if it's a need, if it's a basic need that I need met, or if it's something I want that's not a need, it's just a want. I immediately, before I even express it, I feel impending guilt for even wanting something or expressing that I need it, something from someone. And that's a problem. And, you know, I'm going to tie all of this into why and how this affected me when it came to the fitness stuff, because I learned a really valuable lesson throughout that, which is essentially like what I built a business off of. And I started, you know, we're in the middle of like an entire rebrand, because I started my business very differently from what it is today. Like, CWC 5 years ago was not what it is today. And it took rebuilding my entire website and then going through my entire website, which is massive. My website is big. It's not a normal website. We have all kinds of content, free content for people that is constantly being updated. So like, my website is not what you see, is what you get. Like, you could come back in a week and there will be two new recipes, or you know what I mean? Like, I'm constantly wanting to like keep it fresh and add stuff so that people continue to use it and come back. And we're currently right now in the process of getting the podcast added to it so that like every time I drop an episode, it will like feed into the website. We didn't have that before. So, but like, it began with just, you know, I was fresh off of competing in a bikini competition. So I was coaching women on how to change their bodies. But at the same time, I knew I was different and I wanted to coach differently than any coach I'd ever had. Coaching as a drill sergeant, like just never felt authentic to me. And so I never resonated when I was coached by someone who was like, I don't care if you puke, get up and do it again. I'm like, dude, bye. I don't operate like that. Like I would not do well in the Army because I do not operate by someone making me do something that makes me uncomfortable. And I just don't see the fucking point. Like, great. Like, what's this gonna do? I don't know. I was about to say, I don't know why. I have always just done better on my own. Like, I don't do well in group workouts. I don't do well having a running buddy. And someone's like, oh, hey, I really would love to have a workout. No. My workout time is my time. I will push myself harder. Josh will say I'm lying every day with this, but he doesn't know because he doesn't work out with me when I'm by myself. I push myself harder than if I have a buddy or a trainer or anybody. Like if I have a trainer, I'm the person that will like duck out on the reps. I won't do them. If you tell me to do them and then you turn around, I will not do the reps. I just I'll do them more if I'm by myself. And I think that's just because the way I grew up, I was just forced to kind of deal with stuff on my own. And I think that's why I get really angry these days at like, if I see someone getting their needs met, like it triggers me. And for a long time, like I thought that was weird and maybe it is. It is the way it is though. Like, I'm like, no, I had to figure it out on my own. It's very upsetting and it makes me angry when I see other people like getting their needs fully met. And I think a lot of it is, you know, I have this deep-seated like frustration and anger. Not towards all boomers. I never will generalize with a group of people. But I have this like, I don't know, like I feel like I was forced to figure everything out on my own. I was forced to deal with everything all on my own, even when I didn't know how to. Now that like a lot of us millennials, whatever, are grown and we have kids of our own, I've noticed a trend with most of them wanting to like break that cycle. Like I don't want to like scream at my kids and send them to their room to figure out their shit on their own. Like, I don't want to do that. But it's like, I had to, and now I don't get to. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't get to take like the easy way out and like just be like, be quiet, go to your room, deal with it on your own, or just like not help them deal with it at all. Like I want to help them deal with it, but I feel like it's double the work. Like I've had to do double the work. Like as a child, I did all the work on my own and now I'm having to help my kids when I didn't have that help. And that's where I get really frustrated. And a lot of the things that I struggle with are, that any of us struggle with, whatever you want to call it, ADHD, OCD, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, autism, like whatever label you want to put on it. I think that a lot of this stuff, all of us have a lot of these things. A lot of us have. I don't want to say all, but I think we've just become so used to like slapping a label on it instead of like, where is this really coming from? Where did it start? Which I think a lot of it is starts from just having a really fucked up childhood. And it makes us have these things. And it makes it really hard just to function. And like I said before, when I started to kind of talk about like post-COVID, when I think everything really kind of went sideways, it was hard enough before that fucking play. It was hard enough before to function. And then it just like, the last couple of years have felt impossible. Like, I mean, I think a lot of us are just hanging on by a thread. We're hanging on by a thread in a pot of boiling water that is like this close from boiling over. And I think that has, tipped me over the edge to where I was talking about earlier, just like, I don't have the capacity to care about things that I used to care about. I just don't. Having like my body look a certain way is just no longer a priority for me. And it just is what it is. And I feel freer, like just waking up and not like stressing about eating protein. And like, if I don't work out today, like I'm not going to then beat myself up about it or stress about it. It's just an easier way of living. Ideally, would I like to get up every day and like get a great workout in? Yeah, but it doesn't happen. And I'm choosing, like I'm choosing to film my podcast today because tomorrow I have a lot. Bryn has an awards ceremony and I have to pick them up tomorrow and Josh usually picks them up. So like I have some stuff bouncing around throughout my day. Tomorrow's my normal filming day. So I'm filming today and I'm choosing to film instead of working out. And maybe I should have worked out, I don't know. But I feel like putting podcasts out and sharing this stuff is more important than a workout, I guess. And maybe sometimes it is, maybe sometimes it's not. But, you know, I want to really tell you guys that having OCD, and I like to just kind of hone in on the OCD because I hate these labels. I hate talking about all the labels with all of it, but like trying to just like explain all the things that make you like crazy to most normal people. And I'm using air quotes because I feel like, what is fucking normal? I feel like a lot of us are crazy, but we're the normal ones. Like, I'm like, I'm the normal one and you're not the normal one. Like, just because you don't have all of these things that you struggle with mentally, you're considered normal. I feel like we are the normal ones and you're not. Like, you don't see shit the way that I see it. And that's just the truth. Like, I can't tell you how many times over the years that I have been married to someone who doesn't pick up on people's energy. And I've literally been like, I don't like that person. Like, please don't be friends with them, which comes off making me look crazy, right? If I'm telling someone like, I don't like that person. Like, especially my husband, like, don't be friends. Like, who am I to tell him not to be friends with someone? But I only go off of vibes that I get from people. So when I get a really dark, odd vibe from someone from when I first meet them, like, I don't want this person in my fucking space and I'm married to you. So my space is your space and I don't want this fucking person in my goddamn space. But when I say that, I immediately get labeled like a psycho and like, you're crazy. And then 10 months down the road, when I'm proven right, it's really fucking frustrating to be like, yeah, 10 months ago, I tried to fucking tell you that. Like, I tried, do you remember this conversation? I was like, I don't want this person. Now look where we're at. Do you know how many times that's happened over the course of being married? I can count 10 off the top of my head. Now, present day, Pooh Bear will come to me and be like, tell me what vibe you get off of this person. He knows. He's learned. He's seen it happen time and time and time again. And I'll tell you, there's been a few that have been very like gut-wrenching to be like, oh, I really don't want to say that, but I'm getting a really, I don't like this person. But they seem so wonderful and like they don't seem like, but like, I can just pick up on it. I can't explain it. I can pick up on it even if I'm on the room with the person. I can pick up on it off of a photo. And it sucks, but it's also nice because I feel like I have this like inner barometer to like detect bullshit and to detect if someone is like a for real piece of shit person or not. And it comes in handy, I will say. I will literally have people be like, I've had friends be like, what vibe do you get off of this person? And I've gone against it and it's always bitten me in the ass. So I'm learning to I do not question that gut instinct ever anymore. If I get it, I don't question it. It's there for a reason and it has literally yet to prove me wrong. And those are the types of things that I feel like, yes, that's trauma. Like that is trauma, but it comes in handy. So I wanted to explain a couple of other ways how this shows up. You know, when I was little, I didn't even understand a lot of this stuff until very recently, really, when I started therapy. So I really did spend a lot of my life masking and like trying to fit in where I thought I should fit in, or trying to be a certain way that people wanted me to be, because being who I really was just wasn't an option, because who else is like me? I'm weird. Like, that's what I thought growing up. I was like, I'm crazy. I have these weird things. And I do things, you know, growing up in Oklahoma, when you're a teenager and you start talking about like self-pleasure and half of your friends are like, ew, I don't do that. You're like, well, I do. And I really like it. So that makes me weird. Because when you're brought up in the church, like, and your friends are too, everyone then is like, shouldn't be doing that. Number one, you shouldn't be enjoying it and you shouldn't be talking about it. But I was like, I really like it. Why am I being? And so then, like, you are just like thrust into this state of utter confusion of like, why does this feel so great and I enjoy it, but no one else is. And so I must be the weird one. And I shouldn't be doing something that I like am inclined to just want to do. So then you have no one to talk about it with. And then like, as I got older, I started finding like certain friends who also enjoyed it. And so then I would be like, oh my God, I'm not weird. I'm not the only one. Like, it's not just me. And I think it's funny. I think it's funny looking at, religion specifically, just for like a couple of seconds here, because I don't like talking about religion. Just the role it played on me growing up. And like, for now, the way that I see it is just so interesting. Like, they, you know, I grew up Baptist, so we were on a whole other level. And I just remember like feeling so very confused all the time. Because it was like anything fun or exciting or like something that like brought you pleasure was like not meant to happen. And it was not okay. And you don't, not only do not do it, you don't talk about it. You don't think about it. If you do, you're going to like burn in hell for all of eternity. And that is a really scary thing to instill in a child. And I didn't see any of this until I got older. And I'm like, whoa, wow. What? And then like, if you do think this, you have to like ask for forgiveness and like repent and like, then you'll be fine. And now I just think it's become this whole thing of like, you know, it's become something very different even from when I was growing up. Now it's like, okay, you do these things, but then people have just been so conditioned to like ask for forgiveness that they like knowingly will do something bad. And then they'll ask for forgiveness and think that everything's great. And I just think it's weird, and I don't choose to like be in that space. I just don't want to. I don't want to live my life like that. My life got exponentially better when I began taking the labels off of food and the labels off of the way that I functioned and the way that I thought I had to function, show up in society and in groups of people. And my life got better when I just stopped trying to be a certain way. I've never done well with rules, and I still don't, which is why I don't live my life being governed by a bunch of fucking rules anymore. I have a really hard time these days with even sending my kids to school. Like, I believe it's all crap. It's all, none of it fucking matters. And I believe it's set up to not fucking matter, to keep us all where we need to be, like these little social worker ants. Like, that's all that, you know, and I'm not going to get into this because I hate when I get segued into that conversation, but I just have always had a really hard time following someone else's rules, doing things because someone else says, I mean, even like eating three meals a day, like says who? Who said we have to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Who said we have to eat eggs and bacon at 6 o'clock in the morning, but we can't have pasta at 6 o'clock in the morning because that's a dinner meal? Like, I just don't understand. If you wake up and you're craving pasta, eat pasta for breakfast. If you want to have breakfast for dinner, eat breakfast for dinner. If you don't want to eat lunch, skip lunch. If you know what I mean? Like, We're all so different. And that's why some people don't sleep at night. Some people, like my sister is an insomniac. She always has been. Like, she is like a night owl. She likes being up at night when most other people are sleeping. And so who's to say that like nighttime is the night that we need to go to bed? Like, I just, once I stopped allowing these rules to dictate the way I lived every second of my life, the better my life became. And which is why I'm doing this and talking about this, so that maybe you pick up one little fucking anecdote from the things that I'm saying right now, and you start thinking about one thing that you've been making yourself do that you just stop and you question, why am I making myself do this? Why do I really want this? And I guess those are the types of questions that we encourage all of our clients to ask. Every week we hammer into their heads, why do you feel like you need this? Why do you feel like you want this? Why do you want your body to look a certain way? Why? And here's the thing. If it's something that you really want, say you are wanting to compete in like a bodybuilding competition or whatever, a strongman competition, and that is something that you want, genuinely want to put the work in, there is nothing wrong with that. Put the work in and go for it. But I feel like we get, a lot of women and men get lost along the way because of what we're told is pretty or told is in or told is desirable, then we want to mold ourselves to fit into that so that we are desired. And then we end up doing a bunch of stuff that we fucking hate and despise, living our lives in utter misery just to achieve this one thing that will make people desire us. But then you're miserable. Like, when I was lifting and I had abs year round, I was miserable. I was not eating the foods I really like, ever. I was chained to a diet. I was chained to the gym. That was my life. And for so long, I kept saying, I just want six-pack abs. I just want my body to look a certain way. I'm tired of hating myself. And when I started living in that way and getting that, like, my body started changing and I was getting like like that gratification from like the way I looked, my body, it like fueled that obsession even more. Like, it became a full on, like, I can't ever lose this body. Like, I can't. And for someone who has OCD, that is very dangerous. I remember standing in my sister's kitchen in California when we visited her 2 years ago, maybe three. And I remember, we were talking about therapy or something. And I remember being like, what the fuck was it? Oh, we were talking about the fact that I might need to be medicated, like, for like some of my mental health stuff. And you guys, this was before I took any medication at all. And the medication has changed my life, by the way. But I was like, I refuse to take any medication for my depression or my anxiety because they all make you gain weight. And I'm not willing to do that. And my sister was like, wow, like, you're literally sacrificing your mental health, which is everything, because of your body. Like, you may want to talk to someone about that. And I was like, I know. Like, I knew it, but I wasn't ready. Like, I wasn't in the space I am right now where I would never sacrifice. I would not even for a second sacrifice my mental health now for a way my body to look, or the way that I would want my body to look. Like, it wouldn't even be a question. And it's interesting to look back even just a few years ago, and I was in that headspace still. Like, I'm not willing. No, I don't know. I would be in more of a depressive episode spiral daily if I gain weight. Like, and that holds so many people back and in a place where you're not really even able to live your life on your own terms, live your life the way that you want to live it. And until you let go of that, like, you're going to be chained to something. You're going to be chained, whether it's like a diet or a way that you're just waking up and doing things every day a certain way, or like thinking that you need to live in the gym or like go to Orange Theory or like be on the Peloton every day. Like, unless it's something you really enjoy, you're going to have hopefully have a hard hitting lesson at some point where you just maybe get tired of doing that. That's where I literally got to the point where I could not track macros if I wanted to. It just felt very gross to me. And I say gross to me, macros is literally the basis of what we teach our clients, because that's kind of like the knowledge that you need to have to ever get to a place of intuitive eating. Like, it's a good thing to understand protein, carbs, and fats. It just is. Like, I don't, you know, protein is important. Our bodies are literally made up of amino acids, that's protein. Like, and so it is important. I never knew how important it was before. Now that I know, and I've gone through that whole process, like, I don't want to live my life tracking macros. I know enough about it to know that I need protein and I get it throughout my day because I know how important it is. You know, not just for aesthetic reasons, but for like health, you know, strength, muscle mass, all those things. So but it just got to a point where it felt very iff to me. Like, it was exhausting. I had done it for so long and I knew enough. I'm like, me forcing myself to try to track my macros still is just so weird. It just felt weird and I didn't want to do it. So I stopped doing it and nothing happened. And I think that's the most important thing I want to push here, is that like, I have a lot of clients who I have helped and am currently helping transition into intuitive eating. And it's very scary. Whether you grew up in the 70s, the 80s, or the 90s, or whatever, it's scary to finally feel like you have a hold on something and then to really let it go and be like, okay, you're on your own. Like, let's, like, almost like a baby bird, like, you're ready, fly out of the nest. It's scary because you're like, what's going to happen? Am I going to backslide? Am I going to go back to my old ways of eating and binging and restricting? And if I don't have this macro tracking keeping me in line, what's going to happen? And the truth is, if you haven't done it for very long, you may backslide. I did it long enough to where I learned those key lessons of just being fucking mindful. And I know how cliche what I'm getting ready to say is going to sound. But just letting the fuck go, but not letting go and being like obsessive and just still allowing yourself to just like slow the fuck down and be mindful of just portions and what it is that you're eating, you will not backslide. You will still probably make progress. And I think that is what people need to know. Like, that's the truth. And I knew I had to be a guinea pig. I knew that I had to fully let go of all of that shit, the macro tracking, the protein, all that shit, to look at those two progress pictures the other day and be like, whoa, my body really didn't change. It really didn't. If anything, I feel like I look better now. And yes, I'm flatter. Like, I'm not as full because I was like working out more frequently in that other photo, but like, I not only feel better, I can't describe it. Like, I was even shocked because I didn't know what it was going to be when I compared the two. But I was like, God damn, I still have an ass. I still feel like composition-wise, I look pretty similar. And I can't tell you how many messages I had from women who were like, I don't understand. I don't get it. Like, how does your body look like that when you literally you're just like doing whatever the hell you want and you're barely working out? How does it still look the same? My answer would be that I finally just let go, like 100%. I'm not just saying I let go. I like really let go, mentally let go. It's the only thing, and muscle memory is very real. I spent 7 years working out every day. Not all of those 7 years, but for a big hunk of those years from like 2014 to 2019, I would say I was in the gym almost every day consistently, every week. So I put in that time. I put in the effort. I even did steroids and took a little shortcut a couple of times. And muscle memory is very real. So when you put on muscle, it's most likely, if you do that for a long period of time, it's not going to go anywhere. Like, unless you got bedridden and like, you just like your muscles completely atrophied, like it's not just going to disappear. And so when I still work out now, I strength train with weights because I know that that is how like you achieve that look. I've learned it. So it's not just going to disappear. So I still have cellulite. Yes, I'm a little bit flatter. My muscles are obviously not bulging like they used to, but I do whatever the fuck I want now and I don't fucking care. And as long as my body is, as long as I'm maintaining, I mean, I'm super happy with that at this point. Like, I no longer have the desire to live like I'm in a jail cell with food and the gym. I don't want to live my life like that. I knew from day one, I never wanted to live my life like that. I had to go through that to really understand the process and be super obsessive about it to get to a place now where I can just live and exist. Existing is exhausting enough. I don't need to add other things that are only going to stress me out more. And so to answer that question again, letting go of the stress and the need and the shoulds, I think took a lot of that inner turmoil and stress. Just like, it just went away. Like, I didn't make space for it. It's gone. So when I say that to you guys, why do you think we tell our clients that they can eat whatever they want whenever they want? That is not a gimmick. And no, I don't mean when we say that, I'm not saying to eat 87 donuts a day. When we say stop putting labels on food and stop thinking that something is bad or good or too calorie filling, like, stop. Food is food. There is a psychological reason behind the way we run our program. Food is food. And when you stop labeling it with these ridiculous labels, like a grilled chicken salad is healthy, but tacos are bad, or a burrito is fattening. Like, you putting labels on these foods doesn't mean that they actually have these labels. Those aren't real. We're making them up and putting them on these foods. Then they rule your life because you're not going to eat a burrito because that's fattening. When in all reality, a burrito is so fucking macro friendly, it makes my head spin. Tacos are so macro friendly, it makes my fucking head spin. So when we have clients who are still just like ruled by these rules and these ways of believing, and they come to us and I'm like, and they see like a donut on their meal plan template or whatever, a glass of wine, ice cream. They're like, what? Like, I literally will hear, you're telling me that I can have ice cream every day. I'm like, yes, but did you see the serving size? You can have ice cream every day in a small serving. And yes, you can have it every day if that is something that you want every day. Chips are something that I eat every day because I love chips. Like, that's one of my non-negotiable items. I'm not going to give up chips. I want to have them every day. And so when you allow yourself to really like not have anything that's like off limits, it's very scary at first and you almost don't want to believe it to be true. But once you actually let go of that, something very interesting happens in your brain, because your brain can go, okay, well, you know, I'm paying her to coach me and she's telling me I can have ice cream every day. I don't really want ice cream though. Like, you immediately aren't having that thought of like, I can't have ice cream because my coach told me no, but that sounds really good now, but I can't have it till my next cheat meal. Then that's all that you're going to obsess about because you can't have it. But if you're allowing yourself to have everything fully whenever you want throughout the day and then do it again the next day, it's available. It's like lost that luster. You don't need it. You don't want it. Then when you do have it, you are so much more inclined to sit down with like a reasonable sized portion and enjoy it. Like actually enjoy it and not just be eating to eat. And I think that is probably the one thing that I don't do anymore at all is binge on food, because I don't have the scarcity mentality. I know it will be there tomorrow. I know it will be there next week. I know it'll be there tonight. Like, and just knowing that I can have it whenever I want makes me not need it. I'm fine. Like there's no longer this like, oh my God, I can't have this and it's going to be so good, but I can't have it. It makes it all the more enticing when you are told you can't have something. So tell yourself that you can have whatever you want and then watch what happens. So I'm writing down notes. I made notes and I haven't looked at a fucking one yet. Little changes without restrictions equals confidence and actual change. Just talked about that. My OCD would never allow me to diet or say, I will do this moving forward, because it either becomes a hyperfixation or I'm in a living hell of binging because I can't stand the rules. It made me obsessive and go in the other direction because I'm so literal with everything. Which I think because I'm so all or nothing and I am so literal with things that if someone tells me to do something, I'm not even gonna think about like the real actual way to do it. I will like verbatim do what I was told. And my son is the same way. Bryn is not. Bryn is a lot like Josh. She'll be like, well, what about this way? This looks like a much easier way to do this. And she'll figure something out on her own. Me and Kyler are not like that. Like, bless his heart, he got that from me. And like, I will do something wrong 100 times because someone told me to do it that way. And my brain just doesn't look for like the logical way to do it. I am just doing what I'm told. So when I had a coach initially and I was paying money to this coach, I just did what she said verbatim, which is why I was successful. But it was so funny because everybody was like, oh my God, you love food so much. How are you sticking to this? Well, I have OCD. And I have all or nothing. So like, if I'm going to like commit, I'm gonna fucking commit. There is no other option. That's good and bad. It's good and bad. Now that I've been a coach for so long, I'll tell you what I see right out of the gate. If I have a client who is like type A, like me, I'm still type A, and they wanna understand everything and they wanna understand every facet of the way this program works. And they go the day they get their meal plan guide and they buy all their foods and they have everything prepped and they are ready to work out. Those are the types of clients that struggle the most, because one little hiccup will send them off the deep end because they didn't do it perfect. Perfectionism is literally a mental illness. I used to pride myself on being a perfectionist, and I was riddled with mental illness. It's at the root of perfectionism. You truly believe that you are not good enough unless you're being perfect at something. And so if I do have a client come to me and they are just very kind of like willy-nilly with it, and they're like, oh, I'm gonna get started next week, no rush, didn't really make it to the store, but I'll do the best I can, I will literally watch them immediately just start being mindful. And they're not stressing about meal prepping. They're not like obsessing about, oh my God, I don't have my meal. What do I do? Like, I don't have the plan in front of me. What do I do? They just wing it. And they do long-term, they end up doing better. Now, I'm not saying that every type A client I work with doesn't do well. They can, but it takes a lot of work. It's more work with our one-on-one relationship and our check-ins every week. It's convincing them that you don't need to have a hold on every part of this. You don't need to do all of it right now. Pick one thing, but they can't. Like, they struggle in the beginning with just picking one thing and focusing on that because they feel like they're not doing shit if they're not doing all of it. But the truth is, if you're doing one small thing I don't care how small it is. If you start something and just start walking at night for 10 minutes, that's something. But people like me and other people who are type A have a really hard time believing that walking for 10 minutes is doing shit, because it's just not enough. I need to be killing myself in the gym. I need to be lifting super heavy and murdering my cardio and eating nothing to ever think I can make progress. When in all reality, that's a great way to go backwards. It's a great way to not make progress at all. It's a really great way to ensure that you don't ever move forward with anything, because you can't live in that mentality forever. It's exhausting. You literally, no one can be perfect all the time. So stop doing yourself a disservice. And if you are the type that is type A, or you are a perfectionist and you want to do things like 100%, I hear you, I see you, I know it. I am not telling you to snap out of it. Like I said earlier, I would never tell someone with like a mental illness to just like deal with it. Stop thinking about it, stop stressing about it, because it doesn't work, and I know that. But I can help you start that process of deconstructing that idea that you have to be perfect to make progress, because you don't. And I can show you that. It will take time. Sometimes it takes a month, sometimes it takes a year, sometimes it takes 2 years. Like, everybody is different. And I don't ever think that the way to help someone is by like yelling at them or ordering them or making them do it because of this. This is what you hired me to do. You have to have the compassionate side to be like, I totally see what you're going through, and I've been through it myself, because I have. A lot of anything I've ever coached someone on, I've done it myself. So I've been there. I've been in the trenches. I fucking know what it's like. I've had breast implant illness now. I've had these random flare-ups. So I understand what it's like to have an autoimmune disorder. I understand having an injury. I understand where your mental space is when you are in those low fucking moments, when you feel like nothing is worth anything. So I know how to talk you out of that. Like, you have to at some point have someone who just fucking gets it, and someone who gives a shit about listening to your problems. Because guess what? Even when we have these real problems, we are then conditioned to believe that we can't complain about them because someone else has worse problems than we do. Like, could we be any more fucking detrimental to ourselves? Like, just let yourself exist. Let yourself exist and feel the things that you're feeling, and don't diminish feeling the way that you actually feel. That's a really great way to fuck yourself up some more. Not allowing yourself to feel like frustrated. I did that my whole life. I shoved all of that repressed anger down my whole life. Do you know what it did? 2.5 years ago, I lost my shit. I lost it because like the boiling water finally like boiled over. And I physically didn't have the capacity to cope anymore because I had spent so long not wanting to show the rage that, like, instead of just allowing like it in spurts to come up and just go and like allow my body to just process it, it just remained like sealed up like a tomb of darkness. And so when I did reach points, when COVID hit, I started drinking again, like a lot of people. I could feel it start slowly bubbling to the surface again. And I would still be, I'm very good at like shoving it down. But then it just exploded. And things got really bad before they got better. Really bad. I'm not going to go too deep into that yet. But because it spent so long just fucking festering, when it did finally, I mean, it's going to come out. We can't hold this shit in forever. Like, none of us can. We're all human. So the longer you hold it in and don't just allow it, like I said, in spurts to just exist, you think that you have everything under control. In all reality, you are just spiraling more and more out of control every time that you shove something down. I learned now that it's okay to like cry. It's okay to let emotions out. sporadically as you're feeling them. Because what I have found is if I let them out in the moment, not only does it feel more authentic and it just feels like I want to have this moment to just exist and say what is making me angry, then when it's out, I am so much faster to just be like, oh, okay, nothing bad happened. I felt safe. I was given the space to let that happen. And now it's gone. And I don't feel it like attached to me like I did before. Like everything that I held in before, like I felt like it was like a little thorn that I was just like tacking onto my insides, hanging on to it, waiting for like the perfect moment to just like explode on whoever was in my vicinity. And now it's just not like that. I work really hard on letting myself experience those emotions as they're coming through. Because it's better for my health. It's better for, what I never realized is when I wasn't able to work out, I think a lot of it was like, I was just repressing so many emotions that my body literally like had nothing because it was spending so much time like fighting the breast implants and fighting against all these repressed feelings that I wouldn't allow myself to like be and feel, that like I just had nothing for like the one thing that actually provided me anxiety relief, which was exercising. So like I had nothing. And that was a really low point because that was my medicine and I could always rely on just going to the gym. And when I couldn't rely on that, I was literally forced to like look at everything. So, and ultimately like just wanting to expose a lot of the things that you guys see that are not true regarding the fitness industry, regarding marriage, regarding anything. I feel like I had a client who was like, oh, I really want to try this greens powder. What are your thoughts on those? And I was like, if I'm being perfectly honest, like they're bullshit. They're very expensive. And at the end of the day, like they're bullshit. So look, I worked for and was sponsored by a supplement company, which I still use those products to this day because they're good products. I've used them for 9 years, and which is why I wanted to be sponsored by that supplement company at the time when I was competing, because they were the most, I would say, natural products on the market, which most supplements aren't super natural, but like they were the best in my opinion. And I used all of them and I had great experiences and results with them. So when I was using them religiously, like I was like, damn, I want to be sponsored so I can get my products for free and like get in, you know, get these endorsements. And like, it was exciting. And I look back on that time as like that was a really fun time in my life. And I felt really proud of myself. And the fact that I literally just called this company up and was like, hey, I want to be a sponsored athlete. Like who was I? But it was like that confidence that I was like, I could be sponsored. Why not me? And they legit sponsored me. And it was, everybody was like, how did you land that? And I was like, I fucking picked up the phone. I looked up a number online and I called the guy who managed all the athletes. And I was like, I want to be sponsored. And again, to this day, like I still use their products, and I'm not someone who uses supplements, but I will use their products when I work out occasionally. But most supplements and things out there that are being sold to you, like greens powders and all of that shit, you don't need it. Like, what are you wanting it for? It's the same thing of like, what do you really want this body for? Do you really want it? Are you willing to put in the effort? What's a truck? What's making you like think, oh, I want to buy this greens powder? 9 times out of 10, it has something to do with like not wanting to be bloated or thinking that it's going to improve your digestion. Is there something wrong with your digestion? 9 times out of 10, there's probably nothing really wrong with it. If you're having like extensive bloating and like uncomfortableness after eating meals, then a greens powder is probably only going to make that worse. And the reason I say that is because, again, just personal experience, I've never done well with greens powders. You're better off just trying a probiotic if you are not already taking one. Magnesium would be something else. A couple of the things that most people don't take that they would benefit from if you're experiencing things. Vitamin D, vitamin B, magnesium, DHEA, a probiotic. Those are five things that I would recommend starting with, not all at once. You start with introducing one thing at a time and seeing how your body responds. That way you don't introduce five new things and then you start bloating and you're like, oh fuck, what is it? And then you have to do the elimination thing, which sucks. You start with one thing, you introduce it to your system, give it a couple weeks. Great, you feel great, you feel better, you're not noticing anything, add in another one. And again, this is not medical advice. I'm just saying, like, please stop thinking that like all of these powders and supplements and greens and drinks and teas and cleanses, like stop. Start with some basic ass shit first, because you're probably trying to solve a problem that would be fixed by something so much simpler and cheaper. And you don't need those, you're not gonna need that greens product. So that's the type of shit that I just want to, like, again, I don't wanna say expose, but like, I thought of this and I wrote it down. Back in the day, before I did any of this and knew, and you guys, these supplement companies know that a lot of people don't know enough. That's why they sell this to you. That's why they can sell you a fucking greens powder that literally just has a probiotic and fiber in it for like $38.99, when you could literally just go buy a probiotic for much cheaper and have the same exact result. Probably a lot less bloating, because a lot of those greens powders have spirulina and broccoli and all that shit, which broccoli makes me bloat like a son of a bitch. So I can't take those. Greens powders always made me bloat and I never understood why. Now I do. So back in the day, I was part of an MLM that sold, I'm not even gonna say the name. They actually won a class action lawsuit against them very recently and I got a check in the mail. They had this product called Catalyst, and it was marketed to us to market to other people as like, if you skip a meal, take this Catalyst. It will keep your muscle mass. Like you won't lose muscle. So I would have people literally skipping meals and just eating these pills, these Catalyst pills, because they were like, oh man, I don't want to lose my muscle. And now I can just skip a meal and eat Catalyst. And for so long, I just knew it by the name and I knew that like, it's super good for your muscles if you skip a meal. Well, now I look back on that product and I'm like, what was the main ingredient? It's a fucking amino acid. That's it. Amino acids, again, amino acids are great. If you're eating enough actual protein in the form of food every day, you don't need an amino acid supplement. It's not doing anything for you. It's any excess, you're literally just gonna piss it out. So now that I know that, I'm like, now that I know the importance of eating protein throughout the day, now I'm like, that is how they marketed that to people. Like, I get it, but it's just an amino acid. Like, most supplement companies sell amino acids in the form of like a powder. Like, the supplement company that I love has one, and it's actually, it tastes amazing, and I used to drink it every day, but I learned that if you're already getting enough protein, you're getting amino acids already. So you're not like depleted of amino acids. Now, here's a good thing to say. And they had one, it's called Amino D. I don't know if they have it anymore, but it tasted really, really good. Their flavors were so, so bomb. And I could put like a scoop in like a big shaker of water and sip on it all day. If I knew I was gonna be somewhere where I did not have access to my protein or whatever, like if I just knew I was gonna be somewhere on a drive, like not eating for a while and had just like chips, I would use it. I would put a scoop of the amino whatever in my drink and I would drink that. Cause in a way it's like getting your protein in. Or you could drink a protein shake. So that's where I'm going with all of this. Like, for so long we were sold these things because they would fix this problem and make it better for you, but no one ever told you why or what you were taking, and then people just misuse it. And then they stop eating because they're being sold that, oh, you'll just like keep building your muscle if you just like take these pills every 3 hours. Get away from me. Go. I want to make sure I'm notating. Um, again, I just want to expose this stuff for you and let you guys know that, like, most things you see are bullshit. Mm-hmm. God, I feel like I've covered everything. I'm going to just close out with, because I wrote this, I wrote, allow yourself to exist in all the moments that you have and allow everything to just be. I'm not saying this like I've mastered it, by the way. I am fucking terrible at this. Like, I feel like I have to be so honest with these things that I preach about. You guys, these are all things. Yes, I've mastered some of them. The binging, I don't binge on food anymore because I don't have the mentality that I can't have it and it will never be available again. Like, I know food will always be there and I don't label foods anymore. So I will label a food if it's delicious, a food that I love. Like, that's great. I'm gonna have it every day, but I don't label it in a negative way. And I know that it will always be available. So I don't binge on food anymore. That is something I never thought I would be able to say. So there are things that I've learned and I am better at, and I live differently now. This is not one of them. I am awful at living in the moment. I'm terrible. So I don't want to come at this like, yep, got it all figured out. And this is what you guys need to do too. I fucking suck at this. And if it was one thing I wish could be like an overnight switch, I would take a pill for it. Because I struggle with, like, I hate to use the words again, but oh my God, the ADHD, the OCD, I know I'm autistic. I know all these things now. It makes my life easier because now it's like, that's why I am the way that I am, for whatever reason, whatever the root is, trauma from childhood, whatever. I know that I function in this way. And to most people, it seems dysfunctional, but to me, it's just the only way I've ever known. So taking, again, the same way that I tell you to take labels off of food, take the labels off of yourself. Stop trying to figure it out. You are the way you are. You like the things that you like. You don't like the things that you don't like. If you don't like working out, maybe don't have a big old fucking lofty goal to like get in shape and be super muscular and have abs. If it's not something that you are gonna actually enjoy. And I say that because if I wanted to right now, I could easily go and like get abs again. And like, I know the formula. Like the back of my hand, I wouldn't even have to think about it. I don't want to. That's not something I want. Are there days that I'm like, that I do kind of long, like I'll see a photo pop up in my memories where I was just fucking ripped and my shoulder caps were just popping. Yes, I have that like knee jerk. Oh my God. I want those shoulder caps back. And I'm not gonna lie, sometimes I really do want them back. But the second I actually sit down and I'm like, I don't want all that work that goes along with it. I know that for a fact. I'm good. That's a decision I'm making. And I feel like I never looked at it like that before. I was always just blindly wanting my body to change, and I would do anything at the expense of my happiness to have a body that looked a certain way. And that's fine. I had to go through that season for a reason. Now that I am here to impart this wisdom onto you. If you hate being in a gym and you hate feeling chained to a diet, then stop thinking your body needs to look a certain way and be happy with it the way that it is now. Doesn't mean you can't work to change it, but like maybe not so hardcore. Like, and the accepting of your body as it is right now, I'm sorry, I hate to say it again, but like that's a very important step. And that's a step that everyone needs to do. Like wherever you're sitting right now is fine. You're fine. You don't need to change. You're fine. That was a really hard one for me to learn. And you know, because of all of the way that my brain thinks, it was so easy for me to fall into that obsessive state with fitness. And it just became like, it became my, who I was. It became my persona. And so when I started to kind of slowly shift my brand, it felt like I was being inauthentic. Because I was like, how do I coach if I don't give a fuck about these things anymore? How do I continuously coach my clients if I just don't care about like living in the gym and like tracking my food? What do I do? Do I quit my job? I don't want to quit my job. I love what I do with my clients. I love connecting with my clients every week. And the talks we have, like I love those. And they're not about working out and macros all the time. Do we discuss that? Yes. But it actually is like 2% of a bigger conversation that we end up having. And the conversation I typically end up having with all of my clients week to week is they're struggling with stress or work or family stuff or parent stuff or kids stuff. And it ends up being this much about their body and what they did with their macros and workouts, and this much with how do I deal with what I'm dealing with in my life right now? And it is a lot like therapy. And I help them not from a licensed therapy perspective, because I'm not a licensed therapist. I help them from relating. I've gone through all of it. And I do feel like I've come up with a lot of really good ways to cope and to, and a lot of it at the end of the day is just to stop being so hard on yourself or thinking that you have to be a certain way. Like, you don't. Being you is just fine. If you want to wake up in the morning and reach for your phone before your eyes open and check your notifications or emails, do it. But don't shame yourself because you should have a morning routine. Because Joe Rogan said you need to wake up at 4 o'clock and like pound a protein shake and go meditate and go work out for 4 hours or else you're a piece of shit. And I'm just saying Joe Rogan is like I don't know why, but that's just a name that popped in my head. Like any online like mentor type of person, don't let them shame you into thinking because you don't have a fucking 4 a.m. morning routine that like you're literally last in the race and everybody else who is doing their morning routine is a million steps ahead of you. And again, it's the shaming and the shoulding, and I need to be doing this or I suck. I can't do this because it's indulgent. I can't wake up and reach for my phone. How bad is that? Who gives a fuck? I don't give a fuck anymore. And honestly, it's like the food thing. When I stopped giving a fuck about judging myself or grabbing my phone in the morning, I actually don't really do it like I used to. I used to grab my phone and like lay in bed and dick around. And then I'd be like, oh my God, why am I doing this? This is so bad for me. What the fuck? Why do we put ourselves in these cycles of like doing things we truly enjoy and then beating ourselves up about it and thinking we need to be doing something else? I don't want to live my life like that anymore. So the moment that I really was like, I'm just going to stop judging myself for wanting to check my emails in the morning and my Instagram DMs, and I'll just start doing it and not like caring. Ironically, I don't check it as much. I still check it. My phone is the first thing I reach for in the morning when I wake up, and my glasses so I can read. That's it. I don't have a morning routine. That is my morning routine. This morning I tried to go back to bed because I was so tired and it was pouring down rain. And I threw my bathrobe on and climbed into the car after I took my pills, climbed into the car and took my kids to school. I take my kids to school in my bathrobe every day. It's fucking bliss. And then I come home and I have my coffee in silence. It's fucking amazing. And I dick around on my phone while I have my coffee, and I have like Vanderpump Rules or some smutty ass fucking show on like in the background. And that is the way I enjoy spending my mornings before I get my day started. And if I were living in a belief system where I was still locked into like, just like thinking I'm a bad person every second for doing all of these things, like, what does that do? Doesn't make me do those, like, it doesn't make me want to do a morning routine even more. Then I'm just miserable because I'm like not even enjoying my morning routine that I truly, really enjoy. Just letting myself enjoy it. You guys, let yourself just fucking enjoy the things you enjoy. Let yourself enjoy the things that you truly love to do, as long as it's not hurting anybody. Like, just live, be, exist. Like, I think that we can all agree after the past couple of awful fucking years that we've had, and who knows what the future holds, like, just do what you like, do what makes you happy. If you don't want to waste your life and energy in a gym, you're gonna need to let go of thinking you need to have a certain body type or looking a certain way. And I say that because it was my whole life. It was fucking exhausting. My whole life, it's been exhausting. And my life is still exhausting because of my brain, but it's way less exhausting now because I've let go of all the food and workout bullshit. I don't have space in my brain anymore. Maybe it was just like a forceful thing. Like, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't fucking take it anymore. It just naturally like let itself go. For whatever reason, I am thankful. I never thought I would get to like a place like this. I truly didn't. Like, And a lot of it is not us. Like, stop blaming yourself. Like, a lot of it is our society making us believe that we need to look a certain way. I talked a little bit about this on a 60-second TikTok I did the other day about like how I've been joking about shaving my head lately. Dead ass serious. Not even joking. I have been wanting to shave my head because I'm so tired of the upkeep of hair. I act like I upkeep it. Like but I throw my hair up in a ponytail every day because it's long. I love having long black hair. I'm not gonna lie. I love the way it looks when I get it like ready. I brushed it, by the way. I didn't like get it ready. I took a shower before we went to our concert on Friday and I haven't washed it since because I wash my hair like once, maybe once a week because it just doesn't get greasy. I'm lucky. That's one thing I got very lucky with. And so I haven't washed it, but I brushed it today right before I came in here to film and I like put a couple bobby pins just to give myself a poof because my hair doesn't, I have so many cowlicks that like it, my hair won't do shit. And me and Josh always joke about this. My sister is the same way. We both got my dad's hair and like 100 cowlicks. So like my hair won't do what like most normal, I don't want to say normal, most girls' hair will do. Like when I see a girl with like lustrous, thick curls and like it sets perfectly and like my hair will not do that. I'll show you. So like I tried to just like brush it and let it just like lay down. And it's like always so flat. Like even when I would pay to have it professionally done for like proms, like even my hairstylist would be like, your hair is not gonna do what you want it to do. It just wouldn't. So like, I want it to just lay and like be super cute, but like, look at all these cowlicks in the back. It's just the way it is. And but it doesn't get greasy. So I only have to wash it like, sometimes I wash it once every week and a half. And what was I saying? But I'm just tired of the upkeep. I literally, like, it's a lot of work. So when I do actually get ready and washing it takes forever because it's so long. Washing it, conditioning, getting out, and then I have to dry it and straighten it. It's like a fucking 2-hour ordeal just for my hair. So I'm just like, I was born kind of thinking like, I kind of feel like I should have been born a man or like, I don't really identify, even as a child, I didn't really identify with a lot of the things that most girls were doing and like, princessy type stuff. I just wasn't into it. I was into sports and I was very athletic and I liked playing and roughhousing and I hated the idea of like having to look a certain way or put outfits together. And like Brynn is identical to me. She hates dresses. She hates girly shit and I fucking love it. Oh my God. I can't even tell you what I would do with a daughter who was like a princessy type of daughter. I don't know what I would do. And so I just have always been very low maintenance. With purses, hair, upkeep. It's all exhausting. It's just work. So like when I have all of these things going on in my brain every day already, like you're just asking me to do more work. I don't want to go get Botox. I don't want to do my hair. I don't want to do like the two things that I do consistently, just because I will probably never stop doing them, is I get my hair colored. Obviously, because I love the black now. And like I get my eyelashes done. I've been getting my eyelashes done by my girl, Kristen, for years. And I will probably never do that. That is the one beauty thing that I do for myself that I enjoy. Do you know why? Because then I don't have to put on mascara. I don't even own mascara. I have not owned mascara in years. I don't ever have to do anything to my eyes other than like my eyeshadow if I want to put that on. And so the upkeep of women is just so ridiculous. Of everything that we have to do to look a certain way, which then is, in my opinion, the root. Like I keep talking about, why do we do all these things? Why do we feel like we have to? Well, because society now, all these women have hopped on like the bandwagon of like getting the lip filler, which again, no, there is no judgment. I always want to say that anything that anyone wants to do to their own body to enhance it, do it. Every person should be able to do what they want with their own body. This is just me. I feel like it's made people like me, specifically women, who are inherently very minimalist with like appearance type stuff. I have fallen into that trap over the years because all my friends were like, let's have a Botox party. Let's go do lip injections and let's do this. First of all, lip injections fucking hurt. Lip injections and getting waxed are two of the worst pains I've ever felt. And I, again, like, I don't need to say this, I'm covered in tattoos. It's such a different pain. I got waxed, a Brazilian wax, full whatever you want to call it, one time. And you women came in my Instagram messages and told me that it was nothing. So fast, it's nothing. You get tattoos, you'll be fine. When I tell you the pain with getting your vagina lips waxed, it's like making me squirm thinking about it. I had tears well up in my eyes. I have never felt a pain. It felt like torture, almost like I should have been numbed before she did it. It was awful. I left and I was like, oh my God. Here's the thing. If you could get a full Brazilian wax once every 6 months, and then you needed it 6 months later, I might do it again. Might. The fact that you then get ingrown hairs and the shit is growing back within a couple of days and you're prickly. What the fuck? Why would you? I look at women who get regular waxes in a totally different way now. Like Wonder Woman. I could not do it. And maybe like every pain I feel like is different. And some people look at me and they're like, I can never get that many tattoos. You're fucking crazy. It's a different pain. It is masochistic. Don't get me wrong. Every tattoo I've ever gotten, halfway through, I'm laying there questioning why I chose to do it. But then you're too far in and you got to do it. It's almost like a game with me. It's like a mental, like, I can fucking do this. I can do anything. If I can make it through this tattoo, I can do anything. Like, it's a mental weird game. But the waxing is too much. It's too much pain. Oh my God. I don't know how women get regular waxes. I will say this. The day that I got waxed, oh my God. My butthole has never been that smooth in my life. There's like a little patch of hair that I can never get, ever, ever. It's like I can't fit, the razor won't fit in there. And I've tried waxing and then I just rip my skin off. So like, I just leave it now. I don't care. It's like, I can't reach it. I can't get to it. But like that one time I got that wax, everything was so smooth for like 2 days. Like, even Josh was like, I've never been more turned on in my life. There's no hair anywhere. And it was like the smoothest thing I've ever felt in my life for about 2 days, but that was all it lasted. And it was red as fuck. It hurt so goddamn bad. The lip injections are another thing. Like, that shit fucking hurts bad. And I did lip injections twice, I think. And I didn't like the way it made my lips look. Now, I didn't go to someone who did a great job. And I'm going to go ahead and just shout out, like, the treatment room in Oklahoma City, I will go, that's like my place. Like, I will go to the treatment room. I will drive 2 hours to OKC and go to the treatment room because they do the best job I've ever seen. I've been with my friend who got her lips done and they looked fucking amazing. And I have yet to have Lo do my lips. If I ever decide to, which I probably won't, because I'm just in, like right now I'm in a mode of like, I don't want to do anything for upkeep. Maybe that'll change. If it changes, like Lo will 100% be the one that does, or Amanda does my lip injections. Cause I've seen them do them. And I'm like, well, if I knew they could look like that, I might fucking do it. And everything else that they do there, I had the vampire facial, which I actually do want to have that again. Because I shouldn't call it that. They say they don't call it that anymore. It's called a skin pen, but it's almost like a tattoo. Like it's like a bunch of needles like poking your face and it like rejuvenates, it gets all the dead skin cells and it like puts, it's like the platelet thing. It like puts the blood back in and like stimulates new growth and it erases the dark spots and the fucking, it actually is supposed to help with lines. When I did that, I had a noticeable difference in how soft and smooth and pretty the tone of my fit, like the skin on my face was. I did notice that. I thoroughly enjoyed that treatment and will 100% be doing another one. I actually need to book that. But the treatment room in OKC is amazing. I can't recommend it enough. If you don't live in Oklahoma City and you live nearby, I would drive. I was going once a month. I just haven't in a while. I need to go back. But they're awesome. And they know what the fuck they're doing. And they do it well. So I always want to shout them out. But in the name of, like, I'm just not one of those women who enjoys doing beauty treatments and all that stuff. Because to me, it's work and it's exhausting to keep up with. I am the type that, like, I think the reason I like my tattoos is because I get it done. It's done. I have this on my body for the rest of my life. I did have to go back and touch up Elvis. I've never had to go back though and have a tattoo touched up like that. It healed really weird and it just was what it was. But tattoos, like, I get it. It's instant gratification. I leave that day, it's done. And then I'm done. Like, this isn't going to be like a fucking upkeep. So maybe that's why I like tattoos anyway. And they're expressive and I feel like they make me stand out as someone who's an Enneagram 4, and I want only to be different and be perceived as, like, I stand out, I do things differently. So I like being covered in tattoos. Anyway, that's it. I really ultimately, like, I feel like I didn't even really talk about my OCD, but I did, I guess. Everybody thinks OCD is like the need to be clean and spotless and have everything in order. Yes, I was like that before I had kids. Having kids shook my entire world to its core because I had to abandon a lot of the things that made me feel safe and straight and narrow, which was cleanliness and obsessive organization, not just with things, with my life, with everything. Having kids, just like all of that went out the window. You just don't have control. And the quicker you let go of the need to have control, the better your life will be. Again, I'm gonna fucking burst into tears laughing at the fact that I just said that, because my life revolves around me being in control. And when I'm not, I immediately get angry. And I don't know that that will ever change. It doesn't mean I'm gonna stop trying to let go of having control, because I do believe that if I could just, like, release the need, that and my life would exponentially get better. But it's really hard. And having OCD is a real mental health disorder. It is. I don't want to sit here and be like, we all have these labels now. I have had this since I was a child. It is not just an obsessive need to be clean. It is intrusive thoughts that you latch onto, and then they become your reality, which is scary and exhausting daily. It could be anything. We don't even cook chicken in my house. If raw chicken comes into my kitchen, you don't even want to see my routine if I have raw chicken that someone else is preparing or cooking. We don't buy it, because the process which I go through if someone is preparing chicken is so absurd that we just don't buy chicken anymore. I'm talking like gloves, don't splatter it. Don't put it on a cutting board. You put it wherever, if I'm going to cook chicken, it is in the crock pot. I will get it from Reese's and I will come home and put gloves on and cut the package open and dump it in the crock pot, put that in the trash can. I will disinfect my entire countertops. That's OCD. And it's with every part of your life. So imagine having like an intrusive thought based around everything that you do day to day. And then, like, that thought, it can't just be, like, everybody has intrusive thoughts. That's what my OCD therapist told me. Everyone has intrusive thoughts, everyone. But people who don't have OCD are allowed for that intrusive, they can have that thought come in and then they can recognize it and then they can just spit it back out and like go about their day. People with OCD have a very hard time doing that. They will latch to that and that thought becomes a reality, and then it becomes a fear, and then it becomes an obsession, and it becomes a hyperfixation and a compulsion. She talked about it and gave me like a graph, a circle. I need to find that actually. 136-12 OCD graph. I'm gonna try to find that. I actually have it, but I'll sit like this so we can put it up on the screen. Actually, I'll sit over here. So it basically is, you have a fear or a thought that pops up. And then once it pops up, it goes down to like, you attack, like you get some emotional reaction from it, which forms like a fear or something that you're worried about happening. And so that's when you attach the emotion to that thought, instead of just letting it fucking run free and go away, you're now attaching an emotion to that thought. And then it becomes, okay, how do I deal with this? You're fixating. You figure out, okay, I'm going to do a compulsion. It's like when my storm, if I see a storm coming in, I immediately think I'm going to die. I think it's going to turn into something that no one can predict. Like, you hear about storms that, like, we didn't even see that coming. We didn't know it was going to turn into an F5 tornado. It just happened. That's the thought that I have, that no one, I'm like, no one else, no, you don't know that that's not going to happen. Doesn't matter that my husband is like, we just looked at the radar. I'm like, but you don't know what could happen. If I go to sleep, it could turn into something worse, right? You say the weather changes all the time. He says that all the time. Weather changes all the time, Caroline. So if it can change, he uses that to calm me down. If I see a huge storm on the radar, I'm like, he uses that to be like, hey, it changes. It could change. And there was one the other night, it was supposed to hit us really hard. We got nothing. But that's the thought that my brain, my OCD will be like, if you're telling me it can change and go away when it's supposed to be this big storm, who's telling me that it can't turn from nothing into something if you're telling me it changes? So then my OCD is like, yep, if you don't stay vigilant throughout the night, it could easily turn into a tornado and you're asleep. You're not going to have any time to run all the way upstairs and get your kids down to the shelter. Unless you're watching it all the time. That's the compulsion that keeps me in that loop. That's fucking exhausting. I'm in this the compulsion is constantly being hypervigilant. If I'm hypervigilant until the storm is completely gone and then I can go to sleep, we're fine. We all stay alive. It's that belief. It's like, and it, what's something is so interesting is I have a friend I think I've talked about this one other time, but I have a friend who is a licensed therapist. And she used to tell me before I started my therapy with like someone who specializes in OCD therapy, we were supposed to go on a trip together and I didn't want to fly. We were supposed to go in end of March, booked the trip, booked the room, booked the flight, booked everything. And I backed out 1 month before because I was having like nightmares daily about getting on a plane. I didn't want to get on a plane by myself. And I knew how irrational it was. And I knew how much I was putting out my friends. And I knew how, like, I mean, in my head, I was convinced they would hate me and never be friends with me again, which did not happen. My worst case scenario, 9 times out of 10 never actually happens. And you would think that that alone would be like enough to like get me through future compulsions and obsessions. No, it's not. And she said, Caroline, because I said, I'd rather cancel the flight and just drive. And she's like, do you understand though, that like you are 9 times more likely for something to actually happen if you're on the road for 30 hours than you are in a 2-hour plane ride. And I was like, you see, I understand that. And logically, I'm a pretty smart person. That makes perfect sense. It doesn't make that worry go away. And in my first session, I was talking about this because I canceled the trip. I didn't want to fly. My therapist said, people with OCD, you cannot use logic. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter that the sky is blue and we can see that it's blue. Like, having OCD convinces you that there's something else looming and you can't detach. It's very hard. You can. It's very hard to detach from that belief. And it's a belief. It's a belief that you have to use that compulsion to keep you safe. And so I stopped my therapy because I wanted to go see Taylor Swift because I was like, Taylor Swift is going to do so much more for my mental health than continuing this expensive therapy. Well, I'll just pause it. So I put my therapy on pause for a while. I maybe need to start it back up. But I'm in a very jaded mentality currently where I'm like, this is just who I am. I've been like this my whole life. Like, how is she gonna magically fix me? But she really did already help with just a couple of things that she gave, like that graph really, just even like recognizing that this is the way my brain works, it takes that pressure off of like, why am I like this? Why is life so scary? Why do I obsess about these things? Why do I catastrophize everything? Why is everything always a worst case scenario? Well, that's how I grew up. My mom is a catastrophizer. It's all I ever saw her do. She still does it. Anything. I could be like, I'm taking the kids swimming and she'd be like, make sure they don't stay in the deep end too long. Make sure you're walking. Like That's where I got that. That's where that was born. And maybe that's what caused my OCD. I don't fucking know. But I only know to, I need to know what the worst is so that I can be prepared. That way, even if it doesn't happen, I was prepared if it does. And that, again, I will just close out with, that is such, it's exhausting just living. And knowing these things now has made it easier because I'm just like, okay, I know this is how my brain works and I'll just deal with it the best that I can each time. I will try each time to get better about, being hypervigilant about stuff. But it's like, I feel like that's just in my nature. I am going to try microdosing. I forgot to mention that. I'm going to try microdosing and see if that helps. I've heard that it can be life-changing for people with bipolar, manic depressive episodes, anxiety, OCD, so ADHD. I will obviously be sharing my experience with that. So I'm going to finish with that. I've talked forever. Oh my God. But I really wanted to do this episode. And if you guys have questions, let me know. If you have kids who go through this similar thing, anything that I discussed, let me know. Let them watch this. It's so funny. When me and Josh went to the concert the other night at the BOK Center, it's so interesting to watch two completely different experiences take place. He's not bothered being around groups of people. I almost feel like he feeds off of it. He's turned around talking to the people behind us and starting a conversation with the person down the road. He loves being in groups of people. Doesn't bother him. He feeds off of it. He's like, I love people watching. And I'm like, it's my worst thing because I instantly, if I can detect energy from one singular person, how exhausting is it to be in a group of 30,000 people where I can literally pull what everybody's thinking and feeling? And it's exhausting to a different degree. I literally slept almost the entire day after the concert. I was done. Just mentally, my brain is already working in overdrive when I'm sitting here in my quiet house. How the fuck do you think it is if I am in a space with 30,000 people? And a fight breaks out. I'm instantly get me out of here. Or someone's yelling, get me out of here. I don't like being in any group of people, let alone, I'm now how did I do concerts for so long? That used to be my thing. Concerts are still, no, they're really not. Concerts are not my thing anymore, unless it is something someone I really want to see. Taylor, she is lucky that I have been a Swiftie from day one. That was hard. 75,000 people. I've never been to a concert that big in my life. That was gnarly and it was really hard, but it was worth it. It was the greatest concert. And I said, I loved her from day one. It was more of an emotional connection type of thing. I would go again. With Josh, I wouldn't take Brent again. That was really hard because I didn't have a safety net. I was the safety net. And so I was working overtime. I'm trying to get Josh to take me to the Kansas City show. We'll see. He's like, no. The money you just spent taking Bren and then going to Graceland and Tupelo, I'm like, but I want you to go with me. The tickets are so fucking stupid, outrageously expensive. Anyway, make it lucky though. And yeah, that's it. Now I'm just rambling. If you guys are still here, I'm actually impressed because we are now approaching the 2-hour mark. All right, that's it. Hit me with questions. You're not weird. Whatever it is that you have, someone else is also probably has it too, and you just don't know that, which is why I talk about it. I have said for years, no one is crazier than me. Someone said something to Josh the other day who doesn't know me personally. I guess they saw a picture of me online and they were like, is your wife a little, they said something and I don't remember what it was. They said something alluding to, I would be afraid to get on her bad side. Is that true? And he was like, yeah, she's pretty fucking crazy. I wouldn't want to piss her off. And I was like, I'm the craziest motherfucker that you will ever meet. Don't fucking cross me or else. unless you want to have like a psychopath unleashed on you. Like, so you're like, we're all fucking crazy. And to quote The Breakfast Club, one of my favorite movies, like, we're all a little weird. Just some of us are better at hiding it. So I'm done hiding it. All right. I love you guys. I'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for checking out the CWC podcast. If you want to learn more about our community, make sure to check out the show notes.